Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of Connecting with Can, a podcast dedicated to sharing Kuwait Aid Network's experiences on working with migrant workers. I'm your host, Mariam Assad. And on today's podcast, we have Jeffrey Martin, and we'll be talking about the historical and ongoing crisis in Palestine. I'm sure everyone has heard about the humanitarian crisis happening in Palestine and in Gaza, and we're here today to discuss some of the Palestinian struggles, as well as some of the reasons these things are happening and moving forward how to stop this. We'll start by naming and explaining some Palestinian struggles before and after October 7th of 2023. So, Jeff, can you explain what happened on October 7th and what has happened since then?
Great to be here, Mariam. I'm really interested to talk about this. On October 7th, Hamas, which is the governing body of occupied Gaza, had a surprise morning attack of illegal Israeli settlements and Israeli military bases just across the border and fence barrier from Gaza. The surprise attack was highly sophisticated, using coordinated efforts that Hamas was not previously considered to have, and overwhelmed most of the Israeli military forces in the area around the Gaza Strip. There was over 1,500 casualties reported on the day of the attack, although that number has come down since to about 1,200. And it's disputed about how many of those killed were actually civilian versus how many were armed militia members or settler members or military personnel. It's likely a lower number if you subtract the military and militia personnel in terms of civilian deaths. The attack was brutal and in some ways can be framed as, setting the stage for an escalation in Gaza that's happened since, after over 15 years of occupation of Gaza Strip, since the Israelis withdrew from full occupation in 2006, and over 75 years of occupation of various Palestinian territories in the West Bank and Gaza. Since October 7th, the Israeli Defense Forces have killed an estimated 26,000 people, with another 8,000 people missing and another 64,000 people wounded. 70% of the people who've been killed have been women and children. On the Israeli side, there's been several hundred military deaths since the October 7th attacks. So you see the disproportionate deaths and injuries on both sides. You have a highly sophisticated military force with military technology and capabilities that are among the top ranked in the world versus a occupied strip of land that has almost no resources of its own that it controls. The scale and scope of the war crimes violations that Israel has been accused of are highly documented and come generally speaking from the highest levels of the Israeli government themselves. The defense minister, the current prime minister of Israel, and various cabinet ministers have actively and openly advocated for the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, the deportation or death of the Gazan civilian population, and have disregarded international law around protection of civilians during war and the use of barbaric weaponry, including saturation bombing and cluster bombs on civilian targets, especially in a place like Gaza, which is the densest population center in the world. Starvation, purposeful starvation, the blockade of medical supplies and other important supplies, especially for sanitary hygiene needs, have been perpetrated by the Israeli forces. And in the United Nations itself, there has been a huge groundswell of opposition to Israel's invasion and occupation of Palestine. This is an ongoing issue. The 75-year occupation of Palestine by Israel since its declaration as an independent state in 1948 has led to various periods of occupation and atrocities throughout its history. This is just the current phase of that conflict. There is nothing specifically new about the atrocities being committed against the Gazans or the Palestinians in the West Bank, except for the scale and the tacit approval of the United States, the United Kingdom, and other Western allies who are supplying Israel with intelligence, surveillance, and the equipment and logistical support to actually commit to the bombing. This entire conflict is tacitly approved by the United States, which is the main backer of the Israeli government, which has a very close relationship in arms industry and geopolitical concerns, which has led to the United States basically blocking any concrete attempts to stop Israel from continuing its occupation and war crimes in Gaza, which constitute, by almost any definition that has been given, active genocide, pre-planned murder and slaughter and displacement of people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this kind of the kind of reporting that we've seen, you know, it's all over social media. It's by people in Gaza who are trying to show the world what's happening to them. And it's really heartbreaking every day to wake up to see more news of killings of this kind of scale, where people are fishing people from underneath rubble. You see, you know, very small children who are looking for their parents, who are being heavily abused by the system. And, you know, a lot of them are now disabled. A lot of them are orphans. A lot of them, you know, will suffer the consequences of this their entire lives. And it's really heartbreaking. And also the effect that it's had on, for example, women. You know, women are now in Gaza using cloth from tents to use as sanitary pads, which is really heartbreaking. And the fact that it's been ongoing since October, the kind of difficulties that they've had to deal with, you know, not having access to clean water, not having access to clean air, you know, the level of destruction that's happened within the urban spaces in Gaza, you know, the environment itself will never be able to recover from this kind of bombardment. It's such an environmental crisis as well as being a humanitarian crisis. And the fact that we've had such unspeakable things happen with, you know, like you said, the biggest nations in the world supporting it, it's very difficult to witness. And, you know, a lot of people talk about how, you know, this was never supposed to happen. We're supposed to protect each other within the international, you know, community. And that's just not happening to the Palestinians. You know, we've seen Palestinian children host conferences begging people to stop the killings. You know, we've seen Palestinian doctors host conferences with bodies surrounding them, begging people to see what's happening in the situation that's ongoing. And so, you know, it's such a heartbreaking thing to be witnessing in this day and age. And, you know, especially since there's been so much documented evidence of the Nakba, of the ongoing, you know, situation in Palestine, and the fact that, you know, the Israeli government has been committing these acts of genocide and occupation since the time that it has. And, you know, a really popular question in the media has been why Hamas felt like attacking was the best course of action. And, you know, and there's always kind of been this discourse throughout the whole situation, as, you know, trying to place the blame on that particular thing. And, you know, why don't people just leave despite having so little land and resources left?
Those are all really great points. And I think there's a lot we could dig into there. I think one of the reasons that the media has framed the entire series of events around Israel-Palestine about the October 7th attack, because it actually takes focus off of the larger occupation and apartheid of Palestinians in the occupied territories. The occupation of West Bank and Gaza has been a violation of international law since 1948. There has been hundreds of resolutions by the vast majority of the members of the United Nations against the illegal occupation of West Bank and Gaza since 1948. There has been hundreds of clearly documented cases of genocide, ethnic cleansing, and war crimes by the Israeli Defense Forces since 1948. There is no question, it is the most heavily documented, most clearly detailed case for colonial settler apartheid, for occupation and displacement of indigenous peoples, and for war crimes using the most horrific conventional human weapons other than nuclear that we have, including white phosphorus, which burns people horribly down to their bones, which are illegal under international law by all parties, including Israel, which is a signatory.
Yeah, and I also like to kind of add is that it's not just also weapons, it's tactics to break people down over 70 years.
Forced starvation, mass expulsion from their homes, you know, minimizing the access to medical supplies or surgery, forcing Gazans or West Bankers to go through very long-winded bureaucratic processes to even walk 200 meters from where they live so they can go to work or go to the grocery store or go to a gym or any sort of event. Their lives are highly restricted by a highly complex authoritarian surveillance state that its primary objective is to make Palestinians unwelcome and force them off their land. These are not just like opinions or conjecture. These are the official statements of the vast majority, if not all, prime ministers and presidents and cabinet ministers of the Israeli government since 1948. This is highly documented. There is no dispute. The framing of the issue around Hamas on October 7th as the seminal event that stands alone as an atrocious, brutal event is to take away from context. Israeli propaganda has been highly sophisticated over the last 60 years, trying to remove any information or context into what goes on in the occupied territories. And the media, which is generally speaking controlled by large corporations, multinational corporations, which have interests in Israel or high-level interests with the United States government, like arms industry, like large mining companies, large oil drilling companies, these things, they all have stakes in each other, which is not surprising or, you know, like unrelated. And these companies have an interest in continuing to remove context from the Palestinian crisis because the Palestinian people do not provide them with any source of revenue or income. And they are, as capitalist organizations, are interested in making revenue. Israel is a highly profitable tech industry, has a large, very profitable defense industry in surveillance tech, in drones, and certain types of missile technologies and armored vehicle technologies. Israel uses the occupied territory as a testing ground for weapons, which it sells to its partners and allies, mainly the United States, the UK, Canada, Germany, and other European allies, to make its profit. The testing ground of Palestine and the atrocity against Palestinians primarily is the source of revenue for those companies. The media in many countries has framed the attack as an unprovoked attack by Hamas against innocent civilians, when actually those civilians were in illegal settlements on the border of occupied Gazan land, and actually that land was stolen from the Gazans under illegally, even within Israel's own laws, over the last 30 years. Now, the Israeli government and the Israeli military and the Israeli settler organizations have ignored their own legal system and have continued to occupy the land because their interests and their lobbies are incredibly strong. And right now, the scale of the expulsions, displacement, and war crimes is directly related to the current Israeli government under Benjamin Netanyahu, which is the most far-right extremist government in Israel's history. So these issues have led to a huge escalation even before October 7th of displacement and poor treatment and oppression. Hamas's attack, brutal attack against Israeli settlers and military forces in that day is part of that escalation of an occupation that has not ended.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even like that kind of debate about, like, you know, the people have had online, like, why wouldn't the people from Gaza just leave? Why wouldn't Palestinians leave? And it's like, it's a very kind of, I think, like, very silly question to ask, because you're asking an indigenous population to leave land that they've lived in for thousands of years, that they have deep roots in. There's so much culture there for them to let go of. There's so much history there for them. And also, they're very connected to the land itself, you know? And for them to witness settlers come in and bulldoze, you know, agricultural land, to bulldoze, you know, olive trees and things that they've spent decades, and their parents and their ancestors have spent decades cultivating and nurturing, see all uprooted. It's something that's very difficult to ask somebody to give up, because it's part of who they are. It's part of the culture, is part of the society. And, you know, it is their right. It's their land. It's their home, you know? And so I think that question in itself is very easy for people to ask when they already have their own land, when they already are living in privilege and don't see what the question that they're asking and what they're asking people to give up. So I think, you know, having talked about some of these points, you know, the most important thing that we can discuss is what can we do to support Palestine?
It's actually really simple how you can support Palestine. While governments and multinational corporations can flex their muscle in the media, there is plenty of resources online that you can read, open source, that help you have credible evidence of what is going on. The best way to support Palestine is to continue spreading awareness around the issues and context of the occupation. October 7th is a footnote in a much larger crisis and problem in Palestine. And the best way to actually advocate for Palestinians is through boycotting businesses. The Boycott, Divest, and Sanction movement, BDS, is the primary focus of sanctions against Israel. And these sanctions boycott businesses that support Israel, like Starbucks, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Coca-Cola, Kraft, CNN, The Gap, Ford Motors, McDonald's, Monster, L'Oreal, and many, many more. There's a huge list. You should go to BDS.com and check that list out. And this kind of individual action actually has deeply harming impact on the apartheid state in Israel by forcing companies to give up investments in Israel, which has already happened. Companies like McDonald's, Starbucks, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Indigo have lost billions since October 7th because of their support of Israel. And it has hurt their bank statements. It has damaged their shareholder reputations. They can, for a short term, pretend like it hasn't affected them, but it has affected them massively, especially in the Middle East region. Many Middle Eastern countries, including Kuwait, have had huge drops in sales from pro-Israeli leaning businesses, mainly international corporations like Starbucks or McDonald's. This has had a massive impact on consumer culture, and it has scared merchants and business people away from supporting businesses that the multinational corporations' headquarters support Israel. And this is actually the target that most people I recommend go for, because no one can tell you what to buy. No one can force you to eat at a restaurant. No one can tell you what clothes you own or wear or buy. So this is actually the best individual thing you can do. Check out the BDS website. It's a great resource to use. And I mean, you deciding not to eat McDonald's and going to another restaurant that, you know, provides the same sort of service but doesn't, you know, actively support genocide, something that we can all do. There's very little difficulty in doing this.
Yeah, I agree. And it's something that, you know, is really important for people to actually learn about, which is, you know, how you can support causes and how you can shift your entire way of living as a consumer to not give in to big corporations that are, you know, not just harming your body, not just harming the environment, but are actively supporting genocide and are actively contributing to the economy of countries like Israel. You know, and boycotts and sanctions are nothing new. It's, you know, this is what really helped in South Africa before. And using an example like that really helps us put things into perspective, because if violations like the violations that happened in South Africa occurred and were stopped because of boycotts and sanctions and people testing and speaking up about the abuse, then the same thing can happen for the Palestinian people. And to ask for liberation for an oppressed state and an oppressed population is something that is incredibly important. And in this day and age where we have, you know, this amount of free information available to us very easily, very readily, I think it's really important for us to try to learn and to try to have conversations about these things. And especially when there's, you know, an act of genocide still happening, I think this is a great opportunity for people to open their hearts and learn about what happens around the world. Even if it's something that doesn't affect them, it affects hundreds and thousands of other people. And it's a time for humanity and empathy and learning. And so, you know, it's a really important thing to discuss. So thank you so much, Jeff, for joining me on this podcast. And thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Connecting with Kat. It's our last episode of the season. We hope you're having a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time. Stay connected.